Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the seventh canto, chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Text 31, yeah? 30? Okay. Remember there was no class yesterday. Is that the right verse? Yeah? Thank you. All right. Tong sapta tantum. Tong sapta tantun. Vitanoshi tanva praya chatur hotraka vidyaya cha tvam eka atmatmavatam anadir ananta paraha kavir antaratma Twang sapta tantun vitanoshi tanva. Traya chatur hotarka vidyayacha. Twam eka atma atma vatamanadir. Ananta paraka virantaratma. Twang sapta tantun vitanoshi tanva. Traya chatur hotarka vidyayacha. Twameka atma atma vatamanadir. Ananta paraka virantaratma. Twang sapta tantun vitanoshi tanva. Traya chatur hotarka vidyayacha. Twameka atma atma vatamanadir. Ananta paraka virantaratma. Please chant. Vaishnavis. Anyone else? Satam tu mitano shitanva.
So synonyms, Tvam, you, Saptatantun, the seven kinds of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, beginning from the Agnishtoma Yogya, Vitanoshi, spread, Tanva, by your body, Traya, the three Vedas, Chatuhotraka, of the four kinds of Vedic priests, known as Hota, Advaryu, Brahma, and Udgata, Vidyaya, by the necessary knowledge, Cha, also, Tvam, you, Ekaha, one, Atma, the Supersoul, Atmavatam, of all living entities, Anadihi, without beginning, Anantaparaha, without end, Kavihi, the Supreme Inspirer, Antakatma, the Supersoul within the core of the heart. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. My dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the yogic brahmanas, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agnishtoma. Indeed, you inspire the yogic brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the supreme soul, the supersoul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient, beyond the limits of time and space. Please repeat, my dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the yogic brahmanas, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agnishtoma. Indeed, you inspire the yogic brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the supreme soul, the supersoul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient, beyond the limits of time and space. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, the knowledge thereof, and the person who agrees to perform them are inspired by the Supreme Soul. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mattak Smritir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. From the Lord come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Supersoul is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishta. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. And when one is advanced in Vedic knowledge, the Supersoul gives him directions. Acting as Supersoul, the Lord gives inspiration to a suitable person to perform the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. In this connection, four classes of priests known as Ritvik are required. They are mentioned as Hota, Advaryu, Brahma, and Udgata. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Srinivani Paschachane Shtarne Om Agyana Tamirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shtapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Tapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishavangshya Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Raganatam Vatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya, Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I thought it was going to be a verse after this, but the points are pretty clear, Prabhupada is making here. Hiranyakashipu is continuing to butter up Lord Brahma, glorifying him in appropriate language, but just for the wrong purpose. He is a very determined character, this Hiranyakashipu. We know what he did, standing on his tippy toes, as we say, for 100 celestial years. So much so that when Lord Brahma approached him, he said, "I'm blown away," in essence, he said. "I'm blown away by your austerity. You're so such a determined fellow." But it appears that this determination continued to run in the family because his son, Prahlad, was even more determined than he was. Isn't it? Prahlad, 5-year-old boy. So determined. We're all much older than Prahlad, and I doubt that we would display such determination in the face of such adversity. Some devotees have. I mean, I don't know how many of you have read that book, Salted Bread. How many of you have read that? Yes? So we know there are devotees in this movement who were pretty determined. In spite of all efforts to get them to stop chanting Hare Krishna, to give up this Krishna consciousness movement, they did not, up to the point of death. So that's determination. Hiranyakashipu is exhibiting very, very heavy determination in its austerity because he wanted to become powerful. He wanted to become the most powerful person in the universe. Prahlad's determination was not fueled by that kind of desire. Prahlad's determination was simply fueled by desire to please the Lord, to be a good devotee. So we can, again, do a little bit of a reality check on ourselves. If we were faced with the kind of adversity that Prahlad had to face, would we cave in or would we stand fast? Again, some devotees in our movement have shown that example. They refused. I met some of the devotees who were involved in that particular episode. Formerly, the Soviet Union encompassed a lot of states that are now independent. So one of them was Armenia. So quite a few of those early devotees were from Armenia. And I was there in 95. Yeah, we flew into Moscow when we went to Samara, Rostov, Novorossiysk, Krasnodar. And then we flew to Yerevan in Armenia. So these devotees were pretty determined. I mean, we're talking, Iron Curtain was still very much up. And books had to be smuggled in and hand copied and distributed in that way. So it was a very, very heavy atmosphere. And one of the devotees, his father, happened to be one of the top men in the KGB in that area. So when the son became a devotee, it didn't look good for the father. Just like Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Prabhupada actually said that in one lecture, that if you're the biggest demon practically that ever lived, all the demigods are afraid of you, you raise your eyebrows and they tremble, and your own 5-year-old boy is not afraid of you, that doesn't look good for business. So that's why he was so determined to smash Prahlad. Because it made him look like jello. If your own 5-year-old boy is not afraid, most 5-year-old kids just say like this and they run away. But he was threatening to kill Prahlad, and Prahlad was just, "All right, Hare Krishna." So the father became determined to kill the son, and the son was determined not to give in. Whose determination won out? Prahlad. Why? Why was Prahlad's determination victorious? Because Krishna wanted it that way. Hiranyakashipu is trying to use Krishna indirectly by trying to use the demigods, trying to use Lord Brahma specifically. Well, Rama is there, revived him with his water from his kumandalu. Now he's got a strong, fit body. But that's not enough. He described how his body was strong and fit. It could withstand the striking of thunderbolts. It was glowing like gold. But he wasn't satisfied. He wanted to be immortal. That's the title of this chapter, right? Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Wasn't satisfied to be strong enough that he could withstand the striking of thunderbolts. He wanted to live forever in that body, which is not possible. Krishna says, for one who's taken birth, death is certain. So he took birth as one of a pair of twins with Hiranyaksha. Interestingly, Prabhupada points out that in the Vedic culture, in our culture, if there are twins, the one that's born first, we say is the eldest or elder when there are two involved. But in the Vedic culture, the one that comes out second is considered to be the elder because he was impregnated first. So Hiranyaksha was born first. He was considered to be the younger of the two brothers. And Hiranyakashipu came out second, so he was considered to be the elder. So he was determined. He wanted to live forever in that body, but that body took birth. Therefore, it had to die. For one who's taken birth, death is certain. And for one who dies, another body is also certain. Therefore, the sober person, as Krishna says in the second chapter, is not bewildered by that final change of the body. Just like we're not bewildered by going to sleep at night. We put the body down, and we're off dreaming all kinds of stuff, doing all kinds of stuff. And when the alarm goes off, or somebody in the ashram says, get up, you're going to be late for Mangal Arati. Then you come back to that body. So death is when you put that body down and you wake up in a different body. That's all. Very, very simple. And we've all experienced it innumerable times. Like here we have the word anadi, beginningless. So our material sojourn is also described as anadi by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We've been here so long that it's practically beginningless. Can't remember. We've been through so many births and so many deaths, but still, we don't get it. We don't get it. That the real determination that we should develop is to be like Prahlad. Be determined to be a devotee, no matter what the material energy throws at you. And it's not always adversity. Sometimes it's good times, good things. Some devotees were allured in the early days, especially by material. You know, somebody gives them something fantastic. You leave the Hare Krishnas and I'll give you this, I'll make you that, I'll give you this. Okay. So both sides. One has to be determined not to be allured by positive material situations. And one also has to be determined not to be dissuaded by negative material situations. No matter what the material energy throws at us, we should remain steadfast. It's not so easy. Why is it that devotees, even a small child like Prahlad, can have that determination? Because they've taken complete shelter of Krishna. So they're actually operating on Krishna's determination. You see? It's just like the small child who holds onto the hand of the father feels that he can challenge anybody. Oh yeah, you want to fight? My father will fight you. Like that. When you feel completely sheltered, secure, then you can take on any situation. So that was Prahlad's situation. It's not that he was feeling that, you know, okay, Hiranyakashipu, you may be my father, but I'll slam you, I'll pin you, and I'll give you a chokehold. And he wasn't thinking like that. Not that he was going to wrestle his father, who was such a big, strong guy. No. But because he was completely sheltered by Krishna, he's not afraid. Abhaya. Bhaya means fear. And that's one of the four things that's common to all living entities. Right? Ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitunam cha. Samana etat, pashabi samana. These four things you'll find common to all living entities, be they animals, birds, human beings, demigods even. Ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitunam cha. Ahara means edibles, to eat. Like if you hang out with Shastrakrit and you're bound to get some dosha and coconut chutney and eat very nicely. I recommend if you get a chance to hang around with him at mealtime. Eat very nicely. So eating, everybody's interested in eating. Nowadays we have some sparrows that are very smart. They know exactly when Rabindranath is going to be there with the bowl. And they know some mahahalava is going to fall. So they come and they eat nicely. So ahara, nidra, sleeping. Everybody sleeps. And Prabhupada used to remind us, there's no such thing as like African sleep and American sleep and European sleep. Sleep is sleep. There's not even human sleep and animal sleep. It's not that if you're sleeping in a penthouse in Beverly Hills, you sleep better than the dog who's sleeping on the street in India. Actually, Indian street dogs, to me, nobody sleeps like them. Literally, they're not disturbed by anything. Everybody who's been to India, you've experienced. They're sleeping and literally within inches, a huge truck goes by and they don't even flinch. They just isn't it? We're sleeping at home and, you know, a few firecrackers go off and it's like, I'm so disturbed, I can't sleep. Last night, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock, they were firing on. But an Indian street dog, he can sleep through any condition. Trucks going by like that, they don't care. So who's better off? Who's a better sleeper? But we're so proud we're sleeping on, you know, Sealy Posturepedic, and we think that we've got it made. No, the quality of sleep is not dependent on what on what body you're in or where you're sleeping, you know. No, quality of sleep. It goes on. So ahara nidra bhaya, fearfulness. This is the big one. This is the big one. Nobody likes to be afraid. We'd all like to be fearless in all circumstances. But the material energy is such that it's practically impossible. No matter how much money you have or how strong a body you have or whatever, Maya, the material energy, can arrange a situation where you literally lose control of your bodily functions, even as an adult. I remember in the early 90s, there was a big hurricane. Was that Andrew, whatever it was, that hit Florida? And in the news report, one guy, must have been late 30s, 40, like that. He said, you know, they didn't feel any fear when they heard it was coming and all that. But then when it really hit, he, his wife and two children, they ran in the bathroom and hunkered down. And the whole house was shaking and falling apart. And an adult man, he admitted, he... So fearfulness, you cannot avoid it. The material energy is built in such a way that she's going to put you in fearful situations. Either you're afraid of losing your health, your wealth, your relationships, your life. Something is going to come along. Or sometimes all of them will come simultaneously. But that's foreign for the living entity. We're actually from the world where there is no fear. The spiritual world. There is no fear. There is no anxiety there. That's why it's called Vaikuntha. Kunta means misery or anxiety. And the spiritual world is Vaikuntha. No misery, no anxiety, no fear. But we cannot artificially recreate that here. Hiranyakashipu, he was intelligent. He knew that even though I have this strong body that can withstand thunderbolts, still death can come. He's afraid of that. Therefore, he wants to ask these benedictions that he's going to ask a little later on from Brahma to become immortal. But the average living entity in the material world is so foolish, they don't even worry about immortality. They're happy just to exist for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 decades. When you think of it, 90 years old, like Amala Bhakta. How old is your mom now, Amala Bhakta? I think she's like 100 years old, something like that. Very, very old by our standards. But 10 decades, 100 years, it's not much. Everybody can count to 10. 10 times 10, 100. It's like nothing. But we become so dull when we are materially attracted, that we're happy just to live for 50, 60, 70 years eating nicely, sleeping nicely, driving a nice car. And we think that's it. We think that's it. We're so dull. Our expectations have been so lowered, especially in Kali Yuga. If you could just live peacefully for 40, 50 years in a nice house and eat nice, then I think my life is successful. So foolish. And Hiranyakashipu was not so foolish. He already had accomplished so much. He already conquered so much and had so much material amenities. But he wasn't satisfied. He knew the only way to be really happy is to come to this platform of fearlessness. And the only way to be fearless is if you're deathless. As long as you're subjected to death, then you can't be comfortable here. So the Lord, obviously it's mentioned here, he's deathless, beginningless, endless. And the living entity has the same nature, but we just forget that. And therefore we become afraid. So this Krishna consciousness, which is the summum bonum of Vedic ritualists, it's mentioned here about Vedic rituals, the four kinds of brahmanas that are required to perform sacrifice. Very interesting. One brahmana has to be expert in chanting the mantras. Another one is the referee. Another one has to be very expert in making the offerings into the fire. And the fourth one, you know what his expertise is supposed to be? Huh? No, I said that already, referee. The fourth one is supposed to be expert in lighting fire without fire. No bhik required. Just by reciting the right mantra properly, they can ignite fire in the wood. That's brahmana. So in Kali Yuga, there are no such brahmanas. And therefore, all of these Vedic ritualistic sacrifices are forbidden in Kali Yuga. They cannot be performed if you don't have these four kinds of expert brahmanas. Ashvamedha gavalambam sannyasa palapaitrakam. These things are forbidden in the Kali Yuga. The horse sacrifice, cow sacrifice, offering of flesh to the forefathers. These things are, and sannyas, you may say, well, it stays in 10th verse. Sannyas is not allowed in Kali Yuga, so why do we award sannyas? Well, in the Vedic age, the three higher classes, especially the two higher classes, the brahmanas and the kshatriyas, were expected to follow this pattern of life. First section of life is brahmacharya life, where you become trained by a spiritual master. And the second portion is the grihastha ashram. Third portion is vanaprastha. And then the fourth phase should be sannyas, where you completely renounce everything and simply concentrate on spiritual activities. So that was expected of the higher classes. But in Kali Yuga, again, there's no systematic training in varna and ashram. And therefore you can't produce good anything. You can't produce good brahmacharis, and therefore you don't have good grihasthas, and therefore you can't have good vanaprasthas, and what to speak of sannyasis. So the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is trying to get that in motion again. Not by necessarily rubber stamping you're a brahmana, you're a kshatriya like that, but giving the underlying knowledge, the requisite knowledge, again, by which one can make the determination to become a good brahmacharya, a good grihastha, good vanaprastha, and ultimately good sannyas. But it's definitely not to be taken lightly. It's not to be taken lightly, especially that fourth ashram. Because the sannyasi is supposed to be the head of the entire varnashram institution. And if the head is not good, just like Prabhupada used to say, relatively speaking, you need everything in your body, but relatively speaking, the head is most important. And we've seen, if somebody has a very powerful body, but the head is pugla, you know, they're crazy, you can't even get them to sweep a floor without, you know, messing up. So, physical strength is secondary. What's most important is that your head has to be together. If your head is together properly, then you can work nicely. Even without nice body, you can give somebody else direction how to work nicely if the head is in good order. So similarly on the society at large, if the sannyas ashram is in good order, then they can give direction to everybody. And everything can turn out nicely. And therefore it's not to be taken lightly. In the beginning of the movement, it was taken very lightly. Somebody would get married whimsically, you know, I'm just tired of being a brahmachari. As Naranta Prabhu likes to say very often, it's funny, but you know, they think that, you know, I'm gonna get a wife and then I'm gonna eat sabji with curd every day.
But then after they get married, the only time they have subject with Kurt is when they come to the temple. So whimsically, they get married. And then when it doesn't work out, then whimsically, they want to take sannyas. Prabhupada, I'm tired. I don't want to be a householder anymore. Make me a sannyasi. Like that. So that kind of sannyas, obviously, very, very difficult for that to last because it was done whimsically. But the Vedic culture, as being mentioned here, is meant to be done systematically. First of all, you become really trained and fixed up as a brahmachari. Brahmachari, the main thing is to study. Study, study, study. So, you know, anybody who claims to be a brahmachari and they're running up and down and all find time to do everything else but study, then it's questionable. Main activity for brahmacharis is to study. Study Bhagavad Gita, study Srimad Bhagavatam. Push each other to learn. You know, if you don't like to be tested, then you don't like to learn. Learning means you have to be tested in any institution, isn't it? From kindergarten on up, you're being tested every day. Do you know your ABCs? Do you know your multiplication tables? Do you know your algebra? Do you know your if you're serious about learning, it means you have to want to be tested. If you don't want to be tested, that means you don't want to learn. So brahmachari ashram means the brahmachari should be willing to be tested. Do you know? What is the very first verse of the Bhagavad Gita? Yes? All right. What is the very first verse of the seventh chapter? Are you sure? You should be sure. That's the point. Brahmacharya means, and this is not only in our culture, you see even in Islam, they have these madrasas where they pound the Quran into these boys. They have to learn the entire Quran by heart. And their idea is that if all the books should burn down, somebody should be able to sit down and write the whole thing over again. So we should be like that.
Learn the Bhagavad Gita.
So if all the books get destroyed, you should be able to sit down and rewrite the Bhagavad Gita from scratch. It's a very serious thing. So if you take the brahmacharya ashram seriously, then you'll become a good, serious grihastha. And then, like that, vanaprastha sannyas. All right, we can stop here. Any questions, comments?
Yes, Acharya Narottam Das.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your wonderful class. I understood that only the brahmanas are capable to take sannyas. So by the explanation you were giving, you were saying that also the kshatriyas. Can you give us some examples?
Oh yes, all of them. Bharat Maharaj, so many of them. They gave up and retired. Let's renunciation. Sannyas means complete renunciation for the purpose of spiritual advancement. So the Kshatriyas did that also.
Actually, I was listening to a lecture by Gopi Paranadana Prabhu, and he was mentioned that this is like vanaprastha, but sannyas officially, it's not.
Yeah, again, it's the mood. Krishna himself says in the beginning of the sixth chapter. Do you know what Krishna says about sannyas in the beginning of the sixth chapter? What does Krishna say? All right, that's your homework for today. Yeah, and Ashrita Karma Phalam, that it's not those who light no fire and perform no work that are sannyasis. It's the one who works in this mood of giving up the result of their work for the satisfaction of God. That is a real sannyasi. So we're not necessarily talking about walking around with a stick with three dun. It's the mood of renunciation. That's what makes one a sannyasi. That's a real sannyasi.
So in other words, we understand that it's the mood of renunciation, but not the ashram of sannyas.
Right. Not necessarily, again, walking around with a danda. But the kshatriyas and even the vaishyas were expected to come to that stage of life where you renounce everything and simply concentrate on spiritual activities. That's the real sannyas. Not by rubber stamping and wearing a particular color of cloth. Just like Prabhupada said about grihasthas. He said, if you can live in the company of a willing wife and maintain these vows, then you're better than a sannyasi. Sannyasi is supposed to have no contact with women. That's good. But if you can have contact with women and not fall down, then you're even better than a sannyasi. Prabhupada said that. So it's the mood that makes the difference. It's not necessarily the color of the cloth or what stick you're carrying. Anything else? Yes. Give her the microphone. The top switch? Yeah.
Okay. You said something about the Vedic rituals being kind of forbidden in Kali Yuga, but what we still do, like the fire sacrifices or the deity, things like that. So what's the difference between...
Well, this is different. The sacrifices that we perform, the Agnihotra that we perform, is simply for the satisfaction of the Lord, and it doesn't require the technical aspects that these particular things that are restricted or forbidden in Kali Yuga. The verse says, Ashwamedha Gavalambam Sannyasa Palapaichakam. So Ashwamedha means horse sacrifice. They used to, when they had these elaborate fire sacrifices, put a horse into the fire, and the horse would obviously die, but then it would come out with a rejuvenated new body. That was how expert they were. But we don't have such expertise, so when we do our little fire sacrifices here, we don't put any horses in or any cows. You know, the cow sacrifice was also performed. So that's what they're talking about specifically. But the Agnihotra that we perform, offering grains into the fire, that's okay. But even that should be done properly. There are specific mantras. One should learn to recite them nicely. I don't know if you've ever been to Mayapur, but if you go to Mayapur, the boys there are really trained how to chant nicely. And it's very uplifting when you sit down for one of those fire sacrifices and you hear them reciting Purusha Shukta and Mantra Pushpam and all these. Anything else? Okay, last one.
For the wonderful class, Prabhu. I just wanted to go over one more time what was the four kinds of ritviks. There's the referee, the one who's expert at lighting mantras, or lighting fires with mantras, and what are the other two?
One is a referee. Uh-huh. One is expert in reciting the mantras. The second one. The third one is expert at making the offering, just like you see in our little Agnihotras. Rabindranath has the ladle and the different implements, and so somebody has to be expert at that, know what each implement is meant for, and offering into the fire like that at the right time. Swaha. And then the fourth one is the one who can light fire without fire.
Okay.
Alright? Antarashivan Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Thank you.